This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for Friday the 3rd of May 2013. Hello there, and a very warm welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. We're very pleased to bring you extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending 3rd of May 2013, which this week have been edited by Bill Argles, Kate Butler and Irene Dowding. Now, your readers today are Jean Carswell.
Hello.
Brian Woodruff.
Hello.
And Mary Mitchell.
Hello.
And I am your presenter, Roy Faithful. Right, let's look at what's on in Winchester and the area. Well, the Theatre Royal in Winchester, there's a play called Teachers, and that's on from Tuesday the 21st to Thursday the 23rd of May at 8 p.m. There's a matinee at 1:30 p.m. Then there's Two Gentlemen of Verona, presented by Shakespeare at the Tobacco Factory. That's from Tuesday the 11th to Saturday the 15th of June. It's at 8 p.m. and there's a matinee on Thursday at 1:30 p.m. and there's one on Saturday at 2:30 p.m. And then finally, there's an opera, Don Pasquale, presented by the Swansea City Opera. That's on Monday the 17th and Tuesday the 18th of June at 7:30. For more details, the box office number is 01962 840440. And there's a website, www.theatreroyalwinchester.co.uk. On Saturday the 18th of May 2013, from 11 o'clock in the morning till 2 o'clock in the afternoon, there's King's Fair, a traditional school fair in the grounds of King's School. All sorts of wonderful stalls, children's entertainment, barbecue and picnic area. It's for all ages, good old-fashioned day out, it says here. The Chazal Theatre are going to perform Marlon Brando classic, it says here. A Streetcar Named Desire by Tennessee Williams. Set in steamy New Orleans, it follows fading Southern belle Blanche DuBois as she tries to escape her troubled past by moving in with her sister, Stella. And the performance has begun on May the 18th until May 25th, starting at 7:45 p.m. each evening, with a matinee at 2:30 on Saturday, May 25th. Tickets cost £10 and are available from 0844 8700 887, or you can go on the website www.chazaltheatre.org.uk. Do you remember Tommy Cooper? Well, he's back on stage again, but not really. It's someone else. Damien Williams is going to be playing the title character as he faces the prospect of his first big failure in Las Vegas in 1954. This is at the Theatre Royal Winchester, and when is it on? Tickets cost £16 for adults, £14.50 for concessions, £14 for friends, £12 for groups. And it doesn't say when. Oh, yes, it is. It's on Saturday, May the 11th at 8 p.m. And for more details, call 01962 840 440 or the Theatre Royal website, www.theatreroyalwinchester.co.uk. The prices are cut for the New Forest and Hampshire County show this year. Child's tickets have fallen by 40% from £8.50 to £5. A family ticket has gone from £46.50 to £43. Adult and senior tickets have been frozen at the same prices as a 2012 event. This will be on July the 30th until August the 1st at New Park Brockenhurst. For tickets and more details, www.newforestshow.co.uk. Sparshot College is having a countryside day, Saturday, 18th of May 2013, from 9:30 to 5 o'clock in the afternoon. A great day out for all the family. If you want more details, www.sparshot.ac.uk. or telephone 01962 776 441. And finally, a lineup is revealed for Winchester Festival. Rising stars will join internationally renowned names at this year's Winchester Festival. And let's see, this is running from July the 5th to July the 14th, and there are key figures from the worlds of classical music, literature and politics. Michael Portillo, Best Exotic Marigold Hotel author Deborah Mogach, guitarist John Williams, and former poet laureate Sir Andrew Motion. If you want more details on that, www.winchesterfestival.co.uk or call the booking line on 01962 857 276. Lighting up time ends on Friday the 3rd of May at 5:36 a.m. and begins at 8:31 p.m. On Wednesday the 8th of May, it ends at 5:27 a.m. and begins at 8:39 p.m. Now, if you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have any problems with your memory stick, there is a laminated card inside your wallet to contact Lynn Parker on telephone number 01962 862 826. Please replace the card inside the wallet when you send the memory stick back. Also, if you have a problem with your Sapphire player, before returning it as faulty, please plug in the mains charger and ensure that the battery is fully charged, as several have been returned as faulty and have simply needed to be charged up. Remember too, you don't have to listen to everything all at once, and you can skip articles if you wish. Now, the two front page headline stories this week are Failed Business Bosses' New Plans Scuppered, and the second one is Anger Over Roads Resurfacing Work. So, may we have the story behind the first front page headline, please, Jean?
Yes. Failed Business Bosses' New Plans Scuppered. Auction firm won't move to Winchester. The boss of a collapsed auction house has dropped plans to open a new business in Winchester after a string of stories in the Hampshire Chronicle. Charles Evans planned to open a new auction business at the furniture warehouse in Eastern Lane, Winnell, after a previous business he had been associated with collapsed with debts of thousands of pounds. The move sparked outrage as prospect auction rooms in Alsford shut last autumn, owing money to hundreds of people. Scores of people attended the premises in Prospect Road to try to get their money back or retrieve unsold goods, including cherished heirlooms. But the owners of the Winnell building, alerted by this newspaper's investigation, have decided not to sign a lease with Mr. Evans, and the building is back on the market. Jeremy Braybrook of the letting agents Osmond Brooks said, "Mr. Evans is no longer on the premises. We are showing people around again." Mr. Braybrook said a 10-year lease was never signed, and the building's owners grew concerned about the press articles. "Once we started reading the stories, alarm bells started ringing," he said. "We were not aware of the background. The owner decided this was not something he wanted to be tied up with. I have no idea where he, Mr. Evans, has gone." He said he had heard rumours that Mr. Evans was living at the Winnell premises, but could not confirm it. Mr. Evans, who was unavailable for comment about the scuppering of his plans, claims that Prospect was owned by his partner, Gemma Sharp, of Station Road, Alsford, who has since been declared bankrupt, with debts of some £80,000. According to a report by the official receiver, Prospect owed £39,700 to 300 people for goods that Prospect had sold on their behalf. Mr. Evans, of no fixed abode, claims he was only the manager of Prospect. But in his application for a change of use of the building on Eastern Lane, it was clear he regarded it as his business. On the planning application he wrote, "I started an auction house 3 years ago and have outgrown the premises. I currently employ 10 people. With a larger premises, I will be increasing my workforce to at least 15. Victims of the collapse of Prospect were this week still angry. Susanna Lyle of Cannon Street, Winchester, reckons she is still owed £20,000 for antiques, including 18th century Waterford crystal glass. She said, "I will be furious if he's gone, and so can't stand up and face the consequences. I fear he and Gemma Sharp will get somewhere else and start again. If he gets away from this, I will be very angry. I have never come across anyone like this, so lacking in any sense of integrity. There has been no remorse and no shame." Another victim, who asked not to be named, said, "We should thank the Chronicle for persisting with this. We have not got our money back, but at least Mr. Barney Evans, in which name he's also known, has been exposed. I would still like to know where he is."
And let's have the second front page headline story, please, Brian.
Right. Anger over roads resurfacing work. Winchester City Centre businesses are angry over plans to resurface one of the city's busiest roads. Traders in St George's Street say the council should spend money revamping the pedestrian area rather than work on the road. It will be shut between the Porthouse Pub and Jury Street from approximately 8 p.m. to 7 a.m. from next Tuesday, May the 7th, through to Friday, as part of Operation Resilience, the County Council's programme to improve the road network. But Miff Kayum, who runs the Bengal Sage restaurant, said it was unnecessary and money should be spent making the street more attractive. He said, "It's soul-destroying and really frustrating. I understand resilience is a county-wide project, but when you're in a recession, you have to spend money carefully. Where is the accountability? Who made this decision? We should sort out all the front here for £50,000 and you could have something that would be pride of place for Winchester." Mr. Kayum was supported by several other traders, including Linda O'Connor, who runs Cafe Centro with her husband Ray. She said, "We've been waiting for them to do this bit up for 10 years. We want something that will draw the eye, as it looks dreadful at the moment." Simon Jonas at the new Bieber's hair salon added, "It would be perfect if they did up the decking area. It would bring more people to us and they could put up more tables outside cafes." Side roads, St. Peter Street, Sutton Gardens, Parchment Street, Upper Brook Street, Middle Brook Street and Cossack Lane will only be accessible from North Walls, converting them into two-way streets during the night. The no-entry sign will be covered and that workers will be stationed at the junctions to help with traffic flow. Residents in Lower Brook Street, Garden Lane, Lawn Street and Tanner Street will be accessible via Friesgate. But on leaving these roads, drivers will have to return to Eastgate Street. Pedestrian access through St George's Street will be maintained at all times.
Thank you, and that concludes the front page headline stories. And now we're going to continue with death notices, then Christian comment, followed by letters to the editor, your say, historical items, first person, and Chronicle comment before we go on with general items of news afterwards. I'll start with death notices. Hunt. Margaret Mary Hunt, at home, aged 92. Ingleson. Muriel Alice Nay Farr Ingleson, formerly of Eastgate Street and many years resident of Hyde Abbey Road, aged 100. Lane. David Redvers Lane, peacefully at home, aged 77. Lever, Mary, nay Phillips Lever, peacefully. Matthews, Lily Matthews, peacefully at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, aged 76. Stanley, Colin Stanley, peacefully aged 75. Turner, Grant Norman Turner, peacefully at home. And finally, Tut, Bettine Violet Ann Tut, peacefully aged 76. And now it's Christian Comment, read by Mary.
And this week's Christian Comment is by Rosemary Baker. Perhaps it's my age, but I seem to have been to a lot of funerals, memorial services and retirement dues over the last few months. Saying goodbye in any shape or form is not something I find easy or am particularly good at. Saying farewell to those we don't see often seems to have three parts: summarising how our meeting has been, planning to meet again, and how to stay in touch, and how we hope all will be well with something that is going to happen, or, if nothing significant, their health and well-being. I'd forgotten that goodbye comes from God be with you, until we meet again. Between 1659 and 1694, God seems to have changed to good, probably because of the use of good day and good night. Quite often these days, we know when people are dying, and it is possible in some way to prepare for their death, sometimes accompanying them personally on that journey. The New Radio Times has a picture on the front cover of the BBC's business editor, Robert Peston, and contains within his moving account of the 5 years before his wife's death and what it meant to him and his family. These brave accounts of people's personal tragedies can, I believe, help us and them cope with loss and move on in our lives. Sadly, although we know so much about death and dying, both physically and psychologically, we are still terribly bad at coping on an everyday level, and people find it a difficult subject to speak about. One area that is very hard is the loss of a child, particularly during pregnancy or at birth. It seems that as an event becomes less common, our ability to deal with it lessens too. I consulted Google with the words saying goodbye and came across a newly formed charity of this name which holds services nationally in cathedrals for people who have lost a child in this way. I was even more surprised to discover the next service is in Winchester Cathedral on May the 11th. This Sunday, the church lectionary is about Jesus saying goodbye and that God in the Holy Spirit will be with us until we meet again.
And now we have 10 letters to the editor this week, starting with one read by Jean.
A candidate for canonisation. Sir, dear subjects, I am indeed flattered to be proposed for canonisation as patron saint of England, in brackets Chronicle Letters, April the 25th. Although, as King of Wessex, I may be underqualified, geographically speaking, to represent all of England, much of which was under Danish rule in my day. Mr. Chatterton Newman, the proposer, is quite right in implying that under Archbishop Lanfranc, the Saxon Church went on to the back burner, Pope Alexander giving instructions to William of Normandy to destroy the Church of the Anglo-Saxons, hence our lost saints. The English patron saint in my time was St. Edmund, martyred king of East Anglia, Wessex, of course. And Wessex, of course, has its own, the incomparable St. Edelhelm, whose feast day comes round in 23 days' time on May the 25th. Good luck, live well, and prosper, my people. And that is from King Alfred of Wessex, dictated to D. Pickett, Chairman of the Wessex Society, Ashtree Road, Andover.
And the next one says, hills must be high to hide turbines, and that's from Claire Martin. Sir, Electricité de France seeks permission to build wind turbines on unspoiled farmland at Bullington Cross in a zone classed as low wind speed. The National Grid has the job of seeing there is enough power to cope with the vast numbers switching on each morning. We can't store electricity. If the grid fails, we'll have blackouts. Windmills make electricity when the wind blows. Without it, they make nothing. Gas is a greener alternative to coal and is steady and reliable. If we build wind turbines, we still need another source to provide electricity on windless mornings. In the south, we are running out of fair countryside. We like to walk in it and sniff the clean air. Do we want to fill some of our remaining open spaces with 126-metre, that is 415 feet, monsters that pollute the surrounding area with loud drubbing noise and constant flashing of reflected light? Friends near a wind farm say it's like living in a disco. People unable to move away develop symptoms of stress. Nick Bowles, Planning Minister, and Eric Pickles, Secretary of State, say it's not important to have a distance between turbines and human habitation if there are hills between. They need to be big hills when turbines are this high. Keep Hampshire Green is coordinating the effort to prevent a wind farm at Bullington Cross. On fine days, they fly balloons at a height of 126 metres over the area to draw attention to the incredible height the turbines would be. And that's from Claire Martin of Church Lane, Exton.
Local politics, now a career choice, writes Jeff Brutie. Jilly Peter, in her letter of April the 25th, says that a councillor just substituted one job for another. Indeed he has, and that seems to be the trend in local government, that city councillors, when they retire from full-time employment, seek to top up their pensions by standing as county councillors. This is perfectly legal and will continue as long as local political parties continue to nominate them, because, over the years, councillors have voted themselves such large increases in remuneration that local politics has become a career choice for some. Portsmouth even has a city councillor, Mike Hancock, who is also an MP. If one is a county employee, one cannot also be a county councillor. The reason for this is presumably because there might at times be a conflict of interest. But surely the same applies to those who sit on both city and county councils. Westminster is full of career politicians who have never done a day's work outside politics since university. Local government is now following the movement towards full-time politicians. I do not consider this is good for the community, and I believe that the public have lost confidence in their elected representatives. Fewer than 50% of voters will bother to turn up for the polls today. I would not vote for any county council candidate who is already a city councillor. And that's Jeff Brutie from Manningford Close in Winchester.
The council always gets what it wants. Sir, I do not usually get annoyed because whatever the Stanmore residents say will not be listened to, but here is my two pennyworth anyway. I was born in a house in Fox Lane 61 years ago and now own a house on the old estate of Stanmore. If I live on the most deprived estate in Winchester, as according to the council I do, how can knocking down good houses and garages and building on green spaces improve it? St Catherine's View was given the go-ahead because the new Queen's Head was the alternative pub. Now we do not have a public house, library or any social amenities. What is wrong with extending Badger Farm down into Bushfield? Should the garages in Stanmore Lane be redeveloped, it will be the third time I will have lost a garage through no fault of my own. The first was at the top of Thurmond Crescent, where one-bedroom houses have been built, which I am told are very damp, and the second in Drayton Street, where St Luke's Square now stands. As for public consultations, my late father always said money talks loudest, and no matter what the residents say, what the council wants, the council gets, even if they're supposed to represent the people. And that was from Paul W. Rumble, Keeble Street, Stanmore, Winchester.
The next letter is from Dr. David Abbott, who says more population, more building. Sir, as your columns make clear every week, Hampshire faces terrific population pressures. This results in building on green sites and degradation of our countryside. But people must live somewhere, and as long as the government is unable to control immigration due to membership of the EU, more building will be needed. Pressures will increase further when the numbers of Romanians and Bulgarians arrive from next year. We must withdraw from the EU and live once again as a nation which makes her own laws, protects priceless countryside and meets the needs of her people. And that's from Dr. David Abbott of Kingsmere Meadows, Shawford.
Sad, cynical and very misleading is the headline on the next letter from Emma Back, who's from Winchester Fit for the Future. She writes, I read the recent letters from B. Taylor and P. O'Shaughnessy with sadness. They were not only cynical, but very misleading. Winchester does not possess, as B. Taylor suggests, a very fine leisure centre. River Park is structurally and environmentally unsound, inefficient to run and costly to maintain. It is also too small to meet the needs of our city. Glance just over the border into Surrey to see just how woeful are Winchester's public facilities. For example, Haslemere, with a population of 15,600, has two public leisure centres. Guildford, population 67,000, the county town of Surrey, can boast two large sports and leisure centres with six pools between them, including a 50-metre eight-lane pool, as proposed for Winchester. It also has a 50-metre outdoor pool, a large climbing centre, a county cricket centre, and many private fitness facilities, some of which also have pools. All are well used. River Park Leisure Centre in no way meets the demand for sport and leisure in Winchester. Those seeking fun, exercise, skills development or training must travel around the city and beyond, mostly by car, to find suitable facilities. Those looking for advanced training or competition, for example in netball, gymnastics or swimming, must drive even further. A new facility at Bar End would offer a full range of sport and leisure options on one site. It would be accessible by foot, bike, bus or car, and users from outside the city centre would no longer have to navigate the congested one-way system. If it was well designed and constructed, the building could also be carbon neutral. B. Taylor should find the pollution balance much improved as a result. I do, however, agree with P. O'Shaughnessy on one point, that the open space at North Walls should support rest and recreation. As River Park is decommissioned, it should be replaced with cultural and leisure facilities that are in keeping with the area and to which people would realistically walk. So let's be sensible, strategic and suitably ambitious for our community. Let's build a sports and leisure centre that will meet our needs for many years to come and won't cost the earth to run. And that was from Emma Back from Winchester Fit for the Future.
And Venetia Porchetta, excuse me, echoes the last letter. Bar End would be an accessible location, she says. Sir, P. O'Shaughnessy maintains, in letters April the 25th, that River Park is within easy walking reach of most people who live here. This may be true for those living in the city centre and Hyde. However, the leisure centre provides facilities not only for Winchester residents, many of whom choose to drive due to time, mobility or other constraints, but for a much larger catchment. To take an example, I am part of an adult swimming class, which has a lesson every Wednesday morning. Of the 18 swimmers, only two, including myself, don't drive. This isn't because we are lazy. The group is drawn from a wide area, including Alsford, Mitchell-Deva, Eastleigh, Itchenabbas and Kingsworthy. Frequently, swimmers are late due to congestion around the town centre or arterial roads. A Bar End leisure centre would be a convenient location for many, possibly reducing traffic in the town centre. I would also like to point out that our group could not be described as an athletic elite. And then that was from Venetia Porchetta, Arthur Road, Hyde, Winchester.
Shaking of heads gets us nowhere, says Peter Moore. Sir, Winchester Action on Climate Change are still debating their position on population, says an article in the April 25th issue. But its director, Chris Holloway, is then quoted as saying, the growth in both GDP and global population needs to be reined back. So it reads as though some kind of decision has already been made. Let's hope so. Agonising over the blindingly obvious is surely wasted effort. Perhaps Jonathan Porritt's eloquent, witty and fact-filled presentation convinced Miss Holloway as she surely convinced the Pact Guildhall. but the impotent wringing of hands and shaking of heads will get us nowhere. We need to call our elected representatives to action, telling them to focus on matters far more important than their re-election. They should be campaigning for zero net migration and a sensible policy on family size in the overcrowded UK. They should ensure overseas aid is aimed at the education of women and universal across access to family planning, both demonstrably effective in reducing family size. And that is from Peter Moore, Alison Way, Winchester.
A solution for Bishop's Waltham comes from Elizabeth Hiscock. Sir, read the recent article on delivery lorries ruining the ambience of Bishop's Waltham. As a lifelong resident, I have certainly seen a deterioration over the years. Firstly, Bishop's Waltham's street plan was designed in the medieval 12th century, which is very much promoted today, when there was no knowledge of future needs regarding such necessities, so there is little scope to provide a modern shopping area. Secondly, the Co-op at the top of the High Street has no rear access for deliveries, nor can drivers use Houchin Street, as this would block the exit route from the central car park. This leaves the High Street and the Square as the only place for lorries to park. Thirdly, how many residents park their cars on double yellow lines outside the two Co-op stores so lorries have difficulty parking close to the shops? When I worked in the top Co-op in the 1970s and 80s, there was one delivery a week. As Councillor Miller has said, Bishop's Waltham has grown so much that the shops need all these deliveries to service residents. Finally, since the eruption of coffee shops in the High Street, it has become quite a hazard for pedestrians and mobility scooter users to negotiate the tables and chairs on the pavements, often having to step into the road to get round them. My solution? Mark out specific spaces outside the shops where no cars may park, which would make deliveries faster. Better still, pedestrianise the High Street and ban cars altogether, except for genuine disabled. This would create a much better ambience for everyone and return the High Street to the pleasant shopping area it was in my childhood. And that was from Elizabeth Hiscock of Blanchard Road in Bishop's Waltham.
And this from G.G. Butcher. Mrs. Butcher says, new estate will need a name. Sir, should those responsible for naming the proposed development at Barton Farm be considering a name for the new estate, perhaps they would find Watership Down acceptable. It would certainly be appropriate. From Mrs. G.G. Butcher, Station Road, Alsford.
And that was the end of the letters to the editor. Thank you for all those who contributed. And now it's time for your say. We asked, should the Queen follow Queen Beatrix of the Netherlands and make way for the next generation? Brian has the replies.
And the first reply is from John Walls, 59, oil and gas technician of Northlands Drive, who said, it should be up to her. If she feels she'd like to, then that's fine. But my view is that the way she's done her duty to our country and the Commonwealth is unsurpassed. And the second, Chelsea Furness, of age 21, a student of West Down, said, I know some people are passionate about it, but I'm not sure. It might be good for the country if she did step aside, but if she's doing a good job, why would she? And the third reply is from Ryan Golding, aged 28, a company director of Badger Farm, who said, I think she should stay as long as possible. It's not a question of whether she's done a good job, it's about heritage and institution. And the last reply was from Gemma Donaldson, aged 21, waitress of Romsey Road, who said, she's got to start handing her duties down to the younger royals at some point. She's been in for a long time now. If she does step down, it should go straight to William, though.
Now we're going to go back through the years in our dusty files for our historical items, and we're going to begin with 25 years ago, read by Mary.
Will Labour hold balance of power? A total of 55 candidates of varying political shades line up for election to Winchester City Council next Thursday. This was dated April 29th, 1988. 18 of the council's 55 seats are up for grabs in the polls and could result in an interesting political tussle between the Conservatives, traditionally the ruling group until the last elections, and the Social and Liberal Democrats. If it is a close contest, then the Labour Party could well hold the balance of power on what is currently a hung council. They are fielding several seasoned campaigners, especially in the Winchester wards themselves. And another item from 25 years ago, residents pleaded for their names to be kept secret when they complained to Fair Oak and Horton Heath Parish Council about village hooligans. The residents, whose letter was read at Monday's meeting of the village authority, said they feared reprisals if their names and addresses were revealed. They expressed concern at the way youths were vandalising the area around the shops and library in Summerlands Road. "We've seen so many things happen, and little control seems to be exercised by the police," they said. They claimed youths had been seen on the library roof and glue-sniffing, smashing library windows, drinking, using foul language and urinating in the street.
Now let's go back to 50 years ago, Jean.
And on May the 4th, 1963, this was written. "Cesspool effluent dumped on farm. Complaints of cesspool effluent being dumped on farmland without the farmer's permission have been referred by the Hampshire County Executive of the National Farmers Union to the Rural District Councils Association. The executive in Winchester on Monday endorsed the view of the Basingstoke branch, who raised the protest, that local authorities should have their attention drawn to the practice and to the danger to animal health. Mr. C. E. Suggants, Hambleton, said he was a member of a local authority which had been pumping effluent on land, but only with the cooperation and consent of the farmers. A letter from the town clerk of Winchester, Mr. R. H. McCall, as secretary of the Borough's Committee for England and Wales, setting out the likely views of the Committee on the Beeching Report, was commended at a meeting of Eastleigh Borough Council on Thursday week. Mr. McCall said in the letter that it was likely that the committee would reiterate the view expressed before, that there should have been an adequate plan for substituted services at the same time as the beaching report, thus giving the public and districts affected the opportunity of judging the report in the light of constructive alternatives proposed.
And now let's go back 100 years to you, Brian.
And that is May the 3rd, 1913. Man monopolises fruits of the earth. Sir, is it not a little surprising in this 20th century that such a barbarously cruel and ignorant idea exists that rooks will not return to their rookery until a wholesale massacre of the innocents takes place? I've heard this solemnly expressed 3 times this week. In fact, it seems an E-Day fix. Could anything be more amazingly cruel and against all the laws of nature, except perhaps the mercenary spirit of those who kill them, because they consider the world was made only for man, no other living creature having the right to existence, to share the fruits of the earth, and that man alone has the right to monopolise the increase of the earth to the utmost farthing's worth. The second piece is: at Alternative Petty Sessions, James Travers, manager of the Normandy Street Picture Theatre, Alton, pleaded guilty to a charge of employing a child under 11 years of age in public entertainment without licence at Alton on April the 13th. Police Sergeant Inwood spoke to seeing the child in question sing and dance at the theatre with 2 other girls. The performance lasted about 15 minutes. He saw the woman who was in charge of the girls, and she showed him the birth certificate of the one in question, showing that she was born on April the 22nd, 1902.
Finally, back to Mary for 200 years ago.
So this is May the 3rd, 1813. An interesting case respecting the illegal confinement of a gentleman under a certificate of insanity was heard at Bow Street on Friday evening. The supposed lunatic, Mr. Basing, stated in a very collected manner that in July he was inveigled into a coach under some false pretence and carried to Mr. Rhodes' madhouse at Bethnal Green, that he was there treated as a maniac, although fully in his senses, that he was cut off from all correspondence with his friends, and that a letter he wrote to the Lord Mayor was intercepted, that he at last made his escape at the hazard of his life. His elder brother had lately died, leaving a large fortune, and he was his heir at law. And the second item, at the great session for Merionethshire, Thomas Edwards was found guilty of barbarously murdering a young woman near Trothmar, opposite to Tremadoc, and, pursuant to his sentence, was executed at Dolgethley on Saturday, and his body delivered for dissection. He was in the 69th year of his age, and met his end with an uncommon hardness. He made no confession.
All right, now it's time for First Person, read by Jean.
And this week it's written by Judith Hennigan, and she entitles it Reflecting on Our Tree of Life. The apple tree is dying. I stand underneath it and wonder what to do. It's been dropping branches all winter, and now, as I peer up through skeletal twigs and flaps of lichen, is it lichen? I'm sure it's not the lateness of the spring. There's no greening, no blossom. It must be at least 60 years old, the same age as the house. Shall I chop it down? Asks my 15-year-old son obligingly. No, objects my youngest. The garden will look funny. Besides, my tin is up there. She's right. Her tin is up there, orange with rust, wedged into a fork in the trunk. In fact, I can see quite a few items dangling from the twigs. Socks, a King's School mug, and something that might be a flip-flop. I'm also reminded that whole handfuls of nails, filched from the shed, have been hammered into the bark for want of a proper treehouse over the years. This, along with one summer's efforts to paint the leaves with nail polish, can only have hastened its demise. Remember when you fell out and broke your arm? Prompts my elder daughter. Yep, says the axe-wielding one. Mum thought it was just a bruise. We didn't go to casualty until Henry's auntie said it looked weird. I wince and try to steer the conversation back to the tree. We could grow something up it. A clematis, perhaps? But, of course, no one is interested in clematis. This tree knows the story of our family. It was never so much a shady retreat for snoozing as a lookout, a hiding place for special tins and furtive biscuits and apple lobbing and sulking. Once I was so cross with the dog for pulling clean sheets off the washing line that I grabbed the laundry basket and climbed up there myself, fuming that now, the disobedient animal would see who was in charge, as I clung to a branch and she trotted off to chew another plimsoll. I don't want to chop the old tree down. Not yet. A second child will leave home later this year, and my instincts are to hold on to anything I can. So I order a bare-rooted sapling and dig a hole and think, well, we can wait until a new one establishes itself. Then the replacement arrives, a variety called scrumptious. We plant it on the first warmish day of the season, and I take a photograph in case it's the last. As I walk back across the grass, I glance up once more towards the rotting boughs. The sunshine makes me squint, but something catches my eye. Those dabs of green at the tip of that twig are too fresh for nail polish. So, spring is late this year. I swear that old tree is laughing. Judith Hennigan has four children and lives in St. Cross. She writes books for young people and teaches creative writing at the University of Winchester.
And it's time for editorial comment, read by Brian.
And that's entitled, Hospice is a Leader in Its Fields. The royal visit of the Duchess of Cambridge this week to one of Hampshire's best-known charities is the latest boost to its work across the south of England. The Duchess chose to go along to Naomi House as part of Children's Hospice Week. That she wanted to visit Sutton Scotney Hospice was another pat on the back for the sterling work its specialists and army of fundraisers do year in, year out. The Duchess naturally was welcomed by a large and enthusiastic crowd of onlookers, looking radiant in peach. Earlier this year, Professor Khalid Aziz and the chairman of the hospice was invited to 10 Downing Street to talk to the PM about the anomaly of funding for hospices. Adult hospices receive government aid, but children's centres do not. That could be about to change thanks to the lobbying of Naomi House. Last week, a delegation from Naomi House was invited again to No. 10 at the behest of Samantha Cameron to mark its 16 years of service to those in need. We add our congratulations to all at Naomi House.
And we're on to items of general news, and we'll start with one read by Mary.
Well, this follows on rather nicely. This is the report of the Duchess, and the headline reads, Duchess brings ray of spring sunshine to Naomi House. Children's Hospice honoured on anniversary visit. 2 years ago to the day, she was marrying Prince William at Westminster Abbey. But rather than celebrate her anniversary with her husband, the Duchess of Cambridge brightened the lives of some of Hampshire's most poorly children. She brought some sunshine to youngsters at Sutton Scotney's Naomi House, the county's Children's Hospice. As if by magic, the sun emerged from the clouds just as the Duchess arrived, to enthusiastic applause from a jubilant crowd. After speaking to several children and their families, she was given a posy of flowers by 8-year-old Sally Evans of Durrington, near Salisbury. Sally, who suffers from spinal muscular atrophy type 2, said, "I really enjoyed meeting the Duchess. She has a great sense of humour. I felt rather nervous, but she made me feel much calmer." She asked what my favourite hobbies were, and I told her swimming, art and music. I was going to tell her a joke, like my teacher told me to, but I forgot it. Sally's mum, Sarah, added, "The Duchess was great. She spoke to Sally and I introduced my son, Callum, who's 10. She asked me what I thought of Naomi House and I told her they're marvellous." Kate, in a peach-coloured Tara Jarman coat and dressmaker dress, then toured the grounds speaking to volunteers and more children and families. And there are about 5 lovely photographs of the Duchess, who certainly was wearing a very attractive peach-coloured coat and dress. She sat down at a tea party with several children, taking time to speak to them individually. She visited as part of Children's Hospice Week, and she was visibly moved by a musical performance by Ollie Wade, who was 18, of Saxon Road in Winchester. Ollie's brother Ben, who suffered from cerebral palsy, was a frequent visitor to Naomi House before his death, aged 19, in 2011. Ollie performed his charity single called Free in honour of Ben and said, "I was so nervous before I started, but I have to say it was probably the biggest moment of my life and a massive tribute to my brother." She asked me if I had had any training, and when I said no, she told me I was very talented. Naomi House chairman Khalid Aziz paid tribute to the Duchess and thanked her for honouring the hospice with her presence. "I just hope Prince William is taking you somewhere nice tonight for your anniversary. Otherwise, you have to send him along to the Khalid Aziz Husbandry School."
And yet another accolade for Naomi House. The PM's wife gives thanks for the hospice's work. Staff and children from Naomi House have been at 10 Downing Street at the invitation of Samantha Cameron, the wife of the Prime Minister. The Sutton Scotney-based Children's Hospice was invited by Mrs. Cameron to a reception as a way of thanking supporters who have helped the charity throughout its 16-year history. The reception for 100 guests took place last Tuesday, and among those attending were long-serving volunteers, trustees, patrons, and a number of children, young people and families cared for at the hospice. Also speaking at the reception was Kate Mellor, 19, who visits Jack's Place for respite care. She gave guests a first-hand account of what Naomi House has meant for her and her family throughout the last decade. Chris Robinson, chief executive at Naomi House, said, "We were delighted to be able to thank our supporters from across the region at this special event in London's most well-known address. We're extremely grateful to Mrs. Cameron for inviting us to her home in Downing Street. It was a wonderful opportunity to express our gratitude to just a few of the thousands of kind, generous, and selfless individuals who have made such a difference to the lives of life-limited children and young people throughout Naomi House's 16-year existence." The Downing Street reception was the charity's second trip to Whitehall in recent months, following a meeting of its chairman, Khalid Aziz, and the Prime Minister to discuss funding in the children's hospice sector.
This one is doing more for butterfly conservation. Hampshire Butterfly Conservation has enlarged its flagship reserve on the edge of Winchester. The charity has agreed a 10-year lease with the Church Commissioners for the 9-acre allotments opposite St Swithin's School. The new field, which until recently was grazed by ponies, lies next to the charity's Magdalen Hill Down. At its lower slopes is remnant chalk downland, and so a valuable habitat for butterflies such as common blue and brown argus. In time, the whole of the allotments could become a sanctuary for butterflies, as the rest of Magdalen Hill Down has over the last 15 years. Jane Chapman, reserves officer, said, "This is good news for the butterflies because we are able to link habitats. With fragmentation of habitats, you end up with small pockets, like islands in the sea surrounded by agricultural land. So to make good quality sites better is so much better." She said she would have liked a longer lease, but the landowners, the church commissioners, would like to develop the land for housing. "There's a 5-year break in the agreement, as the church commissioners would like to develop it, so if they get planning through, we'll lose it." With greater security of tenure, Miss Chapman said she would like to invest in improving the soil of the allotments to make it more attractive to butterflies. Until recently, the allotments was grazed by ponies. And there's a lovely picture looking across the allotments area, and also one of the common blue and brown argus butterflies.
Public consultation is to be held on plans for a huge solar farm in the heart of the Itchen Valley. German firm Kronos Solar Projects will hold a meeting on Monday, May the 6th, to discuss the proposed site near Folly Hill Farm near Itchen Stoke. It would be the first project of its kind for the Winchester district. Photovoltaic farms, or solar ranches, use solar panels to generate electricity on an industrial scale. The one earmarked for Folly Farm would cover 70 hectares and generate enough electricity for 30,000 homes. Project manager for Kronos, Macon Yarandi, said it would be considered bigger than typical. The projected completion date would depend on the planning application, but after that plays out, then 6 months. Councillor Kim Gottlieb, who represents the Itchen Valley, said, "I have to approach these things with an open mind because it may come before me at committee. But I seem to recall a similar proposal a while back and most people were happy with it. But I draw a distinction between these and wind farms and I'm looking forward to the consultation." Christopher Napier of the Campaign to Protect Rural England said, "We accept that Hampshire must play its part in terms of renewable energy. It just depends how it's done. We've not had a large solar farm in Hampshire. It all depends on its location in the landscape and what its impact would be on views. And that would depend on contours and the extent to which it's landscaped itself. Some of them go for lots of fences, so that might be an issue," he added. Chris Holloway, director of Winchester Action on Climate Change, WINAC, said, "We're strongly in favour of an increase in the availability of renewable energy in Hampshire."
Whitehall scheme to help cities homeless. specialist advisor among benefits of $1.7 million grant. Winchester City Council has signed up to lead a government scheme to fight homelessness. The council will receive a £1.7 million grant over the next 2 years as part of Whitehall's Gold Standard for Homelessness Prevention programme. The money will fund a specialist advisor for the next 4 years, provide more training for the council homelessness team and voluntary partners, and support local work of national homelessness charity Shelter. The scheme is based around 10 challenges to local authorities, including adopting a no second night out model, creating a proactive homelessness prevention strategy, developing a private rented sector option, and preventing mortgage repossessions. City Council Chief Housing Officer Richard Botham said, "The greatest benefit to the council is the immediate on-site access we have to good practice, knowledge and guidance the advisor will bring to us. We are going to be a lead authority in this programme, and we need to make sure we are meeting standards ourselves." But Labour Group Leader Councillor Chris Pines asked how well the council's team would interact with other homelessness services in the city, particularly around mental health issues. He said, "The housing service in Winchester is excellent in what it provides for the homeless, but how well do they mesh with other services in assisting people with mental health problems?" Mr. Botham said the new scheme would not interfere with other services like Trinity Winchester and Winchester Church's Night Shelter. He added, "Our officers work tirelessly with other agencies to help individuals as much as they can." Housing Boss Councillor Tony Coates added, "We are looking very closely at moving on issues, and we want to be able to move people through the system and stop them being homeless by making sure they have support when they come out of the supported housing system." Michelle Gardner, Director of Strategy at Trinity, welcomed the news. "Trinity is delighted that the City Council is signing up to the government's Gold Standard for Homelessness Prevention."
The next one is headed "New Centre Will Have Wow Factor," and it's headed by a very colourful picture, which is an artist's impression of the new state-of-the-art cancer treatment centre which is to be built. This is the first image of what a new state-of-the-art cancer treatment centre in Hampshire could look like. The ambitious project to create the centre north of Winchester has taken a huge step forward, with a team of designers assigned to create a multi-million pound building with the wow factor. Health chiefs say the centre will be life-changing for thousands of cancer patients in the region, many of whom currently have to endure gruelling 60-mile round trips to receive particular cancer treatments. The centre will be a single site where cancer patients will be able to receive radiotherapy, chemotherapy, palliative care, core therapies, and complementary therapies. Although a location is yet to be confirmed, it will be based in an area of land between the M3, A303 and the A34, and will operate on the same site as a planned £70 million emergency hospital. A design team from Architects BDP have been appointed by Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust to develop their submission of a hospital without corridors. Their design, which beat off competition from 35 other architect-led teams vying for the chance to create the centre as part of a Europe-wide competition, features plenty of light, open spaces and a large courtyard, all designed to keep stress to a minimum for cancer patients. BDP is an award-winning firm based in London whose architects have previously worked on hospital projects in Brighton, Bristol, Nottingham and in Denmark and the Ukraine. The entire project will cost around £18 million in total, with the first phase costing £5 million and the Cancer Treatment Centre building itself costing £10 million.
Banned driver in high-speed pursuit A disqualified driver is behind bars after he led police on a high-speed pursuit through the streets of a Hampshire town on a four-mile rampage. Joseph Grundy's driving was so bad that his partner, sitting next to him, thought she was going to die, a court heard. Grundy was given a 16-month jail sentence after he undertook cars, drove on the wrong side of the road and nearly caused two crashes as his silver Vauxhall Vectra hurtled through a residential area of Eastleigh. Winchester Crown Court heard how staff at Monk's Brook Filling Station in Parsfield Avenue reported that the 37-year-old had appeared to be drunk when he was filling up at the station one evening in February this year. When a patrol car on nearby Lee Road approached the car with flashing lights on, Grundy failed to stop and sped off with his ex-girlfriend sat beside him. Prosecutor Simon Edwards said Grundy's former partner had to shut her eyes and was screaming as he sped down Bishopstoke Road. She thought she was going to die, said Mr. Edwards. Grundy nearly caused collisions with two other motorists, while a police car had to brake suddenly when he braked hard. After making a U-turn by performing a handbrake turn on Fair Oak Road, Grundy headed back the way he came. Eventually, officers were forced to give up the chase at the junction of Grantham Street with Wilmer Road as Grundy sped through the housing estate. They managed to catch up with him by examining CCTV footage taken at the filling station. Grundy admitted dangerous driving whilst disqualified and driving without insurance. He was not charged with driving while under the influence of alcohol. Grundy, originally from Manchester, had made 17 previous appearances in court for 73 offences, including 9 separate appearances for driving whilst disqualified. Richard Tutt, representing Grundy, said he moved to Chandler's Ford to be nearer his family, who live in Eastleigh. He accepts in his entirety, said Mr. Tutt, the course of his driving. It is perhaps by the grace of God the traffic appeared to be relatively light that evening. Sentencing Grundy, Judge Recorder Mrs. Maria Lamb said, I'm satisfied that this was a thoroughly dangerous piece of driving. You show a deliberate disregard for other road users. You show a dangerous disregard for the order of the road. You pay no heed to the safety of other people. Grundy was given 12 months for dangerous driving, a consecutive 4-month sentence for driving whilst disqualified, and banned from driving for 5 years.
Vaccination catch-up campaign starts. Youngsters to be targeted for MMR jabs. Thousands of children and teenagers across Hampshire will this week be targeted as part of a multi-million pound catch-up vaccination campaign in an urgent bid to stop the spread of measles. Youngsters aged between 10 and 16 who have not had either one or two doses of the measles, mumps and rubella MMR jab will be offered the vaccination. So far this year, there has been just one case of measles reported in Hampshire, the same as last year, because historically the region has enjoyed relatively high take-up rates of the injection. To ensure this does not change, local governments have been given funding from central government to get GPs across the county to make those young people who missed out in the late 1990s and the early years of the 2000s, the top priority for vaccination. The £20 million national scheme has been launched after new figures from Public Health England revealed there were 587 confirmed measles cases in the first 3 months of this year in England, more than double the 220 in the same period of 2012. It is feared, in light of the outbreak in the South Wales city of Swansea, that if action is not taken, England would be on course for another record annual high in the number of cases after 1,920 were confirmed last year.
New home site should be given over to school. Planners approve 11 homes despite protests. Council bosses have given the go-ahead for housing in Denmead despite 43 letters of objection. 11 affordable homes will now be built on land at Old River next to Denmead Junior School. At a City Council planning committee last Thursday, much of the debate centred on whether the site could be better used for the school. Gary Mundy, chairman of the school's Board of Governors, said, "We could use this land as a play area or create an outdoor classroom. There's very little area for the children to learn from the outdoors at present." But planning bosses said proposals from the Hyde Group include an ecological site to which the school children would have access. City Councillor for Denmead, Kirk Phillips, spoke on behalf of the objectors. He said, "I'm not going to try and rubbish the plan because it's a genuine attempt by the parish council to address the need for affordable housing within the village. But I will reiterate the lack of access and drainage issues. The roads of Old River were never designed to accommodate this volume of traffic and large vehicles." But Councillor Theresa Evans said, "I think from a planning point of view that this is perfectly acceptable, and I praise the parish council for its work to reduce the density down to 11 properties. Our issue here is that there's an enormous demand for affordable housing within the area. I have sympathy for the residents who will no longer be looking over a field, but it was always going to be developed in some way."
It's a race to get fit in city's first park run. Winchester embraced a new fitness programme sweeping the country last weekend. The city's first 5K park run took place at North Walls Recreation Ground on Saturday, with around 200 runners turning out. And there's a picture of what I would think is probably about 200 runners all waving at the camera before they set off. It's part of a series of free events around the country organised by Park Run UK. Event director Tansy Jill said, "I think Winchester is missing an inclusive, free community event like this, and hopefully this is an opportunity for people to exercise and make friends, as it is a social activity as much as a sport. It can encourage people to have a healthy lifestyle. The whole point of this event is that it's open to everyone, and we're keen for all types of runners to come along and get involved." The event is supported by Winchester and District Athletics Club, and Tansy added, "I'm really, really pleased with the turnout. This will take place every Saturday, regardless of the weather, and we hope to see this many in the future." The course involves three laps around River Park and is led by a cyclist to ensure everyone goes in the right direction.
Cathedral Shipping Service, an annual service at Winchester Cathedral paying tribute to those working in the country's shipping industry, will get a royal visit this year. Princess Anne will visit the cathedral on June the 13th, when it hosts a shipping festival service organised by the Southampton Master Mariners Club. The Right Reverend Jonathan Frost, Bishop of Southampton, will be ministering the service, which will see sea cadets from Southampton and Winchester and the Southampton Albion Band taking part. It will be attended by the Lord Lieutenant of Hampshire, Dame Mary Fagan, the Mayors of Winchester and Southampton, and other dignitaries. The service has been held each year since 1930, apart from a break during World War II, and standard bearers will be involved in the ceremony. All are welcome to attend the service at 7:30 p.m, but applications for tickets must be completed by May the 24th. To apply for tickets, write to the Boat Steerer, Southampton Master Mariners Club, 12 to 14 Queen's Terrace, Southampton, SO14 3BP. I'll repeat that. Write to the Boat Steerer, all one word, Southampton Master Mariners Club, 12 to 14 Queen's Terrace, Southampton, SO14 3BP.
£13 million nine-screen cinema for Whiteley. Controversial plans for a massive cinema at Whiteley have been given the green light by Winchester Council planners. The £13 million nine-screen multiplex will be next to the newly developed Open Town Centre, despite attracting 19 letters of objection from residents. Concerns ranged from traffic congestion to the impact on wildlife. but Winchester City councillors heaped praise on the proposals at a planning meeting last week. Councillor Robert Johnston said, "If that cinema was not built, it would destroy the viability of the whole scheme, and I, for one, enthusiastically support it." Councillor Angela Clear, who sits for North Whiteley Development Forum, said, "This will complete this town centre environment, provide employment and draw people to the area." Councillor Mike Evans, representing Whiteley Parish Council, said it supported the development unanimously, although there were issues still to be resolved regarding footpaths to the site. The complex will be owned by the Whiteley co-ownership £64 million redevelopment of the town centre, with a shopping complex near completion due to open later this month. And there's another artist's impression of how the new Whiteley cinema will look, and it looks pretty impressive.
Trust's mission to save water meadows. Winchester civic chiefs have confirmed the lease of meadows at St Cross to a wildlife trust as part of a campaign to save the area from ecological decline. The City Council Deputy Leader Rob Humby has approved the lease of St Faith's Meadow to the Hampshire and Isle of Wight Wildlife Trust until April 2022. The Council will also give a £4,000 annual grant to the Trust for environmental management of the 5.8-acre site south of Garnier Road. The meadows are part of the River Itchen Site of Special Scientific Interest, but have been declining in recent years because of the growth of non-native willow and poplar planted in the 1970s. The trees have helped to dry out the land, leading the Trust to propose a comprehensive management scheme, including tree felling and cattle grazing. Some local residents have objected to the loss of the trees and the fencing off of the land close to the Hospital of St Cross. A public meeting was held in St Cross last July, but since then, the City Council has received only one letter of complaint from a resident worried about a rise in the water table if the trees are removed. A City Council report said there was likely to be no adverse impact on local properties, a view confirmed by a consultant's report for the Wildlife Trust this month. The report said the trees, which should have harvested years ago, have encouraged the growth of nettles by drying the ground, and their leaf fall has enriched the soil and created a heavy shade. Natural England has allocated £53,800 for tree removal, fencing, restoration of the ditches and channels, and clearing the invasive scrub. The tree felling was completed in February, but soft ground prevented the removal of the timber, now due to take place in September once the ground has dried.
Residents' vision of town's future. Concern over 500 new homes. Alsford residents have revealed how they want the town to change over the next 20 years. But the issue of 500 more homes for the town continues to divide opinion. The Town Council revealed the results of a recent consultation into Alsford's future at a meeting at the Recreation Centre last Thursday, attended by around 30 residents. Among the desired changes were high-speed broadband for homes and businesses, more manufacturing business, a dedicated cricket pitch, and better foot and cycle paths. Four groups were set up to look into the town's needs for housing infrastructure, open spaces and employment. But residents still questioned the need for 500 new homes identified in Winchester City Council's recently approved 20-year local plan. Maddie Attenborough, a photographer of New Farm Road, said, "If we had an extra one-fifth more population, will we still have the same feel in Alsford? I wish I had spoken up at a previous meeting when there were more people here and asked if we were happy about this." But Peter Pooley, 76, of Rosebery Road, said, if we do not build more houses, then the population will not remain stable. It will reduce. The idea that the population remains the same if the number of houses remains the same is an illusion. You need to build a few more houses each year. Around 80 homes already have planning permission, leaving the Housing Needs Group scope to discuss what type of housing the remaining 420 should be. The group said 50% should be one or two bed, and 50% three to four bed, with 50% of the total for affordable housing. Town Council Chairman Lisa Griffith said, "It will not come in one big influx, but will happen in a gradual way. We want Alsford to remain a nice place to live, so it is in our interest to decide what we want to see." Other issues for residents included building a relief road from the A31 for heavy goods lorries to use, so they would avoid damaging main roads, sheltered housing for the elderly closer to the town centre, and the preservation of the Watercress line. Meanwhile, Rodney Jordan, 71, suggested boosting tourism through making watercress beds near the Dean into a wildlife reserve. Penny Washington of Grange Road said, "Change is inevitable, and it's been nice to have an opportunity to about that." The Town Council will review residents' comments at a meeting on May the 16th.
Midnight Marathon well supported. Hampshire mums will be donning their bras for a walk through the night. The Hiltonbury Honeys, a group of 14 mums, will be taking part in the Moonwalk London Marathon on May the 11th. Organised by the Walk the Walk charity, it raises money and awareness of breast cancer and will see more than 17,000 women and men take to the streets of London in bras in different colourful designs, setting off from Battersea Power Station at midnight on the 26.2-mile route. The women, who all know each other and all live in Chandler's Ford area, signed up because two of the mums had lost a best friend to the disease last year. "At some point, it's frightening to think that someone you know is going to be affected by breast cancer," said mother of two, Helena Freestone, aged 35. "Most of us have never tackled such a challenge before and have been training by doing as much walking as they can. They hope to power walk around and finish in 7 hours, raising £2,000 for the charity. And to sponsor them, you could log on to walkthewalkfundraising.org/Hiltonbury Honeys. Between Hiltonbury and Honeys, there's an underline. And there's a picture here of the young ladies all wearing pink bras outside their T-shirts, colourful skirts and lots of pink hats.
Call to review bypass bid. The cost of building a bypass around a village could end up £32 million less than was first feared, a study has claimed. Campaigners have long called for a road to take the bulk of cars away from the heart of Botley to reduce traffic congestion and air pollution. Plans to move the route to the north of the village have been ruled out by Hampshire County Council for the next 20 years, amid concerns that the cost could be as much as £50 million. But Eastleigh Borough Council asked for a £50,000 feasibility study in an attempt to breathe life back into the project. The report, drawn up by specialist consultants, has now found that a single carriageway route with a 40-mile-per-hour speed limit could be installed for £17.5 million, some £32.5 million less than some early estimates. Now there are calls for the County Council to put the bypass back on the agenda. Councillor David Airey, Cabinet Member for Transport and Street Scene, said, "I will be seeking assurances from the County Council that they will review how the Botley bypass fits within their priorities as a result of this new assessment."
A special day to remember Dylan, Bishop Stoke fundraiser for Autistic Society. Friends of a former Eastleigh schoolboy gunned down in the Newtown School massacre in the US are planning a sparkling fun day in his memory. The hub in Bishopstoke will be transformed into a colourful and vibrant focal point for a day of activity and entertainment to remember young Dylan Hockley, and there's a lovely picture of him here. The 6-year-old, who grew up in Eastleigh, was one of 20 pupils killed when a crazed gunman went on the rampage at Sandy Hook Elementary School in America. Now, friends of the schoolboy's parents have started planning for a major event called A Day for Dylan in June. As well as remembering Dylan, the Jamboree will also raise money for Hampshire Autistic Society. The youngster was diagnosed with the condition while living in England. As previously reported, a picture of Dylan is being used to drive home the human cost of the tragedy in December last year and to help in the campaign for tougher gun controls in the country. Dad Ian, who moved his family from Hursley to America when his job was transferred to New York, said he was delighted to hear about the summer fundraiser. He said, "We are deeply honoured that this event is being run in memory of our beloved son, Dylan. He was a wonderful boy, and with the excellent support of his educators, he was making great progress at school and overcoming his challenges. We are excited that the money raised from this event will give other autistic children the opportunity to develop to their full potential. I want people to celebrate life at this event, both Dylan's and the lives of all our children that are so precious to us. I want them to understand the challenges that having a child with special needs brings for a family, but also the joy if you embrace that and see the world through their eyes. With the right support, like Dylan was receiving, then amazing results can be achieved. From midday on June the 29th, the hub will be filled with stalls, competitions, taster sessions, dance exhibitions and raffles. There will be a ticketed evening event for 250 people with live music, an auction and a barbecue. Organiser Lynn Trott, a friend of the family, said, "Dylan lived in Eastleigh until he was five and his family had links with many of us in Hampshire. He was a joy to be around, had a loving nature, a smile that could light up a room, and an infectious laugh."
Newcomer Nets National Care Home Award. A Winchester care home has won a national award less than a year after opening. Colton Care St Catherine's View Home in Stanmore Lane has been named Best Specialist Dementia Facility at the Pinders Healthcare Design Awards. The home opened in May 2012 and judges said that its attention to detail was superb and it was clearly built on an understanding of how to enable independence. It has specially designed rooms and gardens to stimulate memories and colour schemes, corridor and room features and indoor and outdoor navigational aids have all been introduced with dementia care in mind. Residents live in a small house group and are helped to retain practical life skills and independence for as long as possible through shared daily activities. Judging panel chairman said, John Chapman said, "The attention to detail, both inside and outside, is superb, clearly built on an understanding of how to enable independence while minimising the frustration and stress which dementia brings." Colton head of technical design Alan Portsmouth said, "People living with dementia respond very well to environments that are safe, therapeutic and stimulating. That approach has been informed all aspects of the design of St Catherine's View and the ongoing care we give to our residents." And there's a large picture here of quite a number of the staff showing off their award.
Supermarket set to open. A new supermarket is set to open in Winchester next week, 2 weeks later than planned. Aldi will open in Burnett Close Week at 8 a.m. on Thursday, May the 9th. Opening hours will be from 8 a.m. to 9 p.m. Monday to Saturday and 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. on Sundays.
Pilot killed as replica World War One plane crashes. A pilot was killed when his plane came down in a field near Stockbridge while taking part in a practice display of replica First World War aircraft. Investigators were this week continuing their examination of the scene to establish why the small aircraft crashed at the Army Aviation Centre in Middle Wallop. The pilot, a 68-year-old man from Horsham, West Sussex, was the only person on board. He was pronounced dead at the scene. His aircraft was a single-engine, single-wing replica First World War aircraft, which was involved in a group practice display at the time. The wreckage was removed from the site last Sunday night. The crash at 4:55 p.m. on Saturday is being investigated jointly by Hampshire Police and the Air Accident Investigation Branch, AAIB, based in Aldershot. Witness Nick Bays from Andover said he saw about 12 planes in the air when the accident happened, some of which seemed to him to be flying close together. He said, "I was returning home and saw a large number of replica aircraft doing circuits over the airfield. There were maybe a dozen or so in the air. It was unusual because they were so close together." Mr. Bays said that he did not see the crash itself, but he saw smoke coming from where the aircraft came down. A spokesman for AAIB confirmed that inspectors are investigating, and there's a photograph of the aircraft which looks really totally demolished, and an investigator in a mask close by.
Con man, get PIN number. Thieves have stolen money from an elderly Winchester woman after conning her into revealing her PIN number. Last Wednesday, between 9 a.m. and 3:20 p.m, they entered her home and stole the 92-year-old purse. The offenders then phoned the victim and impersonated someone from her bank to obtain her PIN number. At around 3:20 p.m. that day, at a Lloyds TSB cash point in Bishop's Waltham, cash was taken from her account. Police are appealing for information following the burglary at her Dean Lane home. PC Graham Wren said, "I'm appealing to the community of Dean Lane and surrounding areas to come forward and speak to us if they saw or heard anything suspicious in the area last Wednesday. Did you see a vehicle parked on Dean Lane, or did you see anyone unknown walking in the area? I'm also appealing to anyone who may have seen anybody acting suspiciously in Bishop's Waltham at around 3:20 p.m. on the day of the offence. Anyone with information should contact PC Wren at North Walls Police Station on 101 or call Crime Stoppers anonymously on 0800 555 111.
The size of the Hampshire Chronicle changed this week down to a tabloid size, and there's a talking point from Andrew Napier about this. He writes, "The size of the pages of your Hampshire Chronicle may be smaller this week, but in every other respect this newspaper remains the same, one of the most trusted in the country. Many people have been predicting the death of newspapers, apparently irrelevant in the 21st century. Do not believe these supposed visionaries, the techno-buffs who argue that newspapers in their printed form are redundant. More than 35,000 readers a week would beg to differ, handing over hard-earned cash for the paper that contains on average every week around 140 news and sports stories, features, comment, an art supplement and property sections. Few creations in the last 1,000 years are as perfect in their design as a newspaper. It can be glanced at or flicked through in seconds, the reader's eyes scanning for items of interest, or read at a more leisurely pace from cover to cover. This flexibility is impossible on a mobile phone, laptop, tablet or PC. The techno-savvy elite believe that just because such and such is possible, it will immediately kill off any established form. But did radio kill newspapers? Did television? Of course, young people are engaging with news in new ways, but the visionaries really should get out more and see how most people live. They forget most people in this country are not young and do not want to be connected, enthralled to Twitter, to Facebook and other social media. For every one person whose mobile phone, laptop or tablet is seemingly part of their bodies, there are 9 ordinary people who still look at paper maps, visit libraries and talk to someone face to face. Obviously the long-term future is digital, but there will remain for the foreseeable future a major role for newsprint. It remains profitable in a fast-changing world, not least because it offers anyone who wants to open their eyes to the world the simplest and quickest way of being fully part of a community. Want to check Winchester City's football result, or the latest planning committee, Crown Court cases, local letters to the editor, or a theatre review? You can do it in 2 minutes with the newspaper while your computer is warming up. There are those who say that technology has democratised news, given a voice to those unheard. Yes, those new voices are to be welcomed. But when everyone on the internet is screaming the truth, who can you believe and trust? The Chronicle's reputation is based on decades of fair, accurate and honest reporting by trained journalists, seeking not an impossible truth, but to be truthful. Fairness, accuracy and balance are our watchwords. That will remain, whatever the size of the page. And if you've got an issue that you'd like to share in Talking Point, you can send your submission for consideration to news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. Submissions apparently should be between 450 and 500 words and include a photograph of yourself.
Includes the extracts for this week. Thank you to our editors, Bill Argles, Kate Butler and Irene Dowding. Thanks to our copying, dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And of course, thanks to our readers, Jean Carswell.
Goodbye.
Brian Woodruff.
Goodbye.
And Mary Mitchell.
Goodbye.
And from me, Roy Faithful, it's goodbye for now. Thanks for listening, and we hope you enjoy the week ahead. Please post your memory sticks back in the yellow wallet together with a laminated card when you've finished listening. Thank you, and goodbye again.